This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. And today, of course, we're with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin answering your questions. And so what's our next question, Layla?
We've got an email from Larry. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. One of the weight loss systems advertised on the radio claims that you have to balance your hormones in order to lose weight. What exactly does that mean?
Well, I'm not going to speak for them,
yeah,
but I find it fascinating because I listen to a lot of AM radio. I'm on AM radio, and I drive a lot in a car, and I put on these programs, which are commercials or infomercials for a weight loss program that purports to invariably make you lose 25 to 40 pounds of toxic fat in 40 days. So let's tackle that proposition first off.
Yeah.
Good idea, Layla?
No, not at all, because we found out.
No, I want to lose that weight fast.
I gotta
lose weight for Aunt Sally's, wedding.
Okay, but after Aunt Sally's wedding, you're going to gain it all back.
No, they promised.
Because after 40
they
days.
They promised that you're not going to gain the weight back, that they haven't.
Yeah, I really wouldn't
money
buy
back
it.
Guarantee.
Money back guarantee for how long? I want that money back guarantee up to 2 years after you've lost
okay.
the weight.
Yeah, I don't know how it works. It sounds...
Yeah.
Preposterous to me, and also a really bad idea.
It does.
Because, it's when you, even if it were possible to lose that amount of weight through virtual starvation.
And that's what it is. It's a very low-calorie diet. It's not sustainable
that's
for
what
more
I've heard.
Than 40
That's what
days.
I've heard. It's like a 500 or 600 calorie diet. But let's say it's possible. You
yeah.
have slowed your metabolism down.
Right.
To a crawl, and woe unto you, because we see those types of people here at the Hoffman
yes.
Center. They're very hard to get to lose weight, and we recently had a kind of an expose of The Biggest Loser, where people came forward and said, I was a contestant on The Biggest Loser, and it's the worst decision I ever made in my life, because I got a lot of, attention, and I got some prize money, and, I got, some coaching and training, but it was all wrong, because...
Yeah.
They encouraged me to get a draconian program of caloric restriction with punishing exercise that's unsustainable.
Yes, and low fat.
And low fat. And exactly. Wrong, too.
Totally
That,
wrong.
Too. Since fat's so caloric, they eliminate it. And it's not a sustainable way of life.
Yeah.
Plus, it damages your metabolism because your body thinks it's starving and it wants to hold on to its fat.
Right.
Because it teaches the body that a famine is around the corner and that you need to store fat in the eventuality that this is going to happen again.
Mother Nature wants us to survive.
Yeah. So it's a simple survival mechanism that kicks
yeah.
in. So what they say is it's hormonal. Well, that is a big duh. Yes, weight loss is hormonal, but they discuss it as if it's some, novel discovery that weight gain is hormonal. Of course it's hormonal. It has to do with multiple hormones. It has to do with your female hormones. It has to do with your male hormones. It has to do with insulin,
ghrelin,
adiponectin,
leptin. Yes.
It has to do with multiple hormones. And that's, if you think that the pharmaceutical industry has been asleep at the switch in a quest to come up with a safe, effective diet pill, think again. Some of the best minds in the fields of endocrinology have been pondering this for not just decades, but, centuries.
Yeah.
Trying to come up with some amazing drug, usually. It's a drug intervention or some hormone intervention. And they say in this claim that their technique is drug free. They just figured it out. That somehow they give you something homeopathic or maybe a vitamin or, some special eating plan that somehow meets
right.
your particular hormonal fingerprint of why you're fat.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's preposterous.
It is.
It's preposterous.
It is. And by going on such a low calorie, this is a crash diet
yeah.
for 40 days.
And I'm going to say this, and this is kind of controversial, but I'm going to say it right out front, is that I am ashamed to share the airways with those kind of shows.
Mm-hmm.
It, to me, it's a blot on my reputation
mm-hmm.
as a sensible and realistic and science-based nutritionist to have an equivalency with those, because it's like, you know, they have, you know, an hour of time and then I have an hour of time to present my case. It's like as if
yeah.
we're on the same plane
right.
of, you know, of scientific, we can lay the same claim to scientific veracity.
Yeah.
I find it...
it's appalling.
It's appalling. It's
Bravo. Bravo.
None of that, it's appalling also in the sense that it's a betrayal of public trust.
Yes.
Because yes. the amount of sadness, hardship, disappointment, that creates for people who are mm-hmm. plagued with the problem of overweight,
mm-hmm.
is literally a moral crime.
Right. Right. It is. It is. Wow.
But well, that will tell you what I really think. I've been holding back.
Oh, gosh. Larry, thank you for your very thoughtful question. And don't embark on any kind of crash diet, which is purporting to keep it off forever. There's no such thing.
Right.
Again, we would all be rich. All right. Good morning, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. This is an email from Harry.
By the way, parenthetically, we have success stories of people who have lost major double digits in weight.
Yes.
But they have completely changed their lifestyle.
Yes.
And it's very rare that you find someone who is that committed.
Right.
And gets the proper guidance and follows through.
Exactly.
But we'll have people, you know, lost like 90 or 100 pounds
mm-hmm.
In our practice.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time. And it's doable.
It is doable.
But it's a complete, it has a lot to do with the brain. You know, it's almost like having a religious revelation.
It's a lifestyle change.
Yeah.
Eating is a behavior. You have to change your behavior. That can become very, very difficult. That's why even as nutritionists, we should probably minor in psychology for this very reason. Because
I'm called upon that all
behavior.
The time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to deal with that. And then sometimes we'll outsource it. We'll say, look, let's, you know, we can tell you what to eat,
yeah.
but you've got to get your head on straight about this because
right.
you have, like everyone has, ambivalence.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have such a great degree of ambivalence that they're constantly yo-yoing between commitment
yeah.
and screw it.
The stages of change. One of the primary things we learn becoming nutritionists. You know, are you in pre-contemplation? Are you in contemplation? Are you ready for action? I forget some of the other, but you have to kind of assess that
mm-hmm.
with every patient. So
right.
that's important. Anyway, so Harry writes, good morning, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. I heard you mention when making a smoothie, you should make only enough for one serving. Why is that? I've been making 5 days worth on a Sunday to last each morning, Monday through Friday. Because when you process your nutrition like that,
mm-hmm.
you're basically, you're degrading
mm-hmm.
the nutrient
yep.
content.
Yep.
Even chopping on your chopping board,
yes.
chopping, pulverizing,
yes.
mincing, all
yes.
of that with maybe the exception of garlic. You know, because the allicin develops a little bit when it sits.
I just learned this.
Yeah.
I just learned this in an interview with a doctor who contends, and he's also very culinary. He goes to he's a
mm-hmm.
foodie. He goes to like all the fancy restaurants in New York. He really seems to know a lot about food.
Mm-hmm.
He shared with me that when you mince garlic, there's a chemical reaction that occurs. It's kitchen chemistry. Where you slice it and you macerate it or you
yes.
press it and you begin a chemical reaction where you create allicin.
Mm-hmm.
You
yes.
create
it. Kind of let it sit for a couple of minutes.
Something
like
called
that.
Alanase and a chemical reaction
yeah.
occurs. But if you let it sit for a couple of days.
Oh no, forget it. And you're going to have a really stinky kitchen.
Right, right.
to boot.
Well, I'm not thinking
so,
it's, you know, let's even assume that it's not going to get rotten,
yeah.
you know, or fermented. But there's some process that occurs when you break plants. Another process that occurs is the generation of sulforaphane.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in certain vegetables, myrosinase degrades glucoraphanin into sulforaphane. It's a kitchen chemistry reaction. Mm-hmm. It actually happens when you chew raw or lightly braised broccoli. The maceration releases certain things in your
there
mouth,
you go.
And then you digest the sulforaphane.
Yeah. So better to chew your food, number one. But Harry, when you're making a smoothie like that, you're also exposing it to heat and light. A lot of micronutrients degrade or are diminished by heat and light, primarily the B vitamins as well. And nothing should last 5 days in your refrigerator like mm-hmm, that. By mm-hmm. day three, it should go in the garbage. But you just make enough for that one serving, you're going to have the most nutritional bang for your buck.
Right. Well, let's talk, more generally, I think a lot of people know to make fresh smoothies. Although it's a little time consuming, I think that's not a way, you don't want to scrimp on that. But let's say leftovers. What about mm-hmm. leftovers?
Leftovers, the rule is really day three. If you've roasted a mm-hmm. chicken for Sunday dinner, and there's anything left by Wednesday, it should really be tossed.
Right.
People think cooked food will last up to a week in the refrigerator.
Two reasons. One is the potential for growth. One is the potential for bacterial growth.
Yes.
But the other is that there's some devitalization that occurs with that refrigeration process, right?
Yeah. And just because your refrigerator
loss
is
of nutritional
40
value.
Degrees, loss of nutritional value just being exposed, mm-hmm. heat and light, and the growth of bacteria. Mm-hmm. Just because it's 40, 38, 39 degrees is not going to keep all bacteria from growing.
Right.
And it's particularly the Clostridium perfringens, which is the same bacteria that you see on a diabetic leg wound.
Oh, wow.
Or something like that. But take those leftovers, don't have more than a couple of days in the fridge, and put the rest in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
You can freeze up to 2 months, most things.
Well, have to say, what I like to do is whenever I make salmon, I get about 50% more than I'm going to eat.
Yeah.
And I like to have some extra salmon because mm-hmm. in the morning I can have some cold salmon.
Nice.
I can make
delicious
salmon salad. I can take the salmon and I can put some celery and some mm-hmm. avocado mayonnaise in it with some onions.
And what I do is dill
capers.
Oh, yeah.
I just did that.
It's delicious.
I just did, literally, I did it with capers.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll chop some walnuts into it.
Yeah.
And I'll
stuff it into half an avocado.
And I'll season it with turmeric.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because turmeric gives tuna salad. Tuna is a mercury fish. I sometimes eat tuna. Try to get the low mercury con, but it's hard to know that it is indeed low mercury.
Mm-hmm.
So don't want too much. But salmon is very amenable to next day preparation. But I think that stays for a little while. Maybe you could stretch that to 4 or 5 days. Maybe.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, got a good, cool part of your refrigerator.
Exactly. Exactly. You want to make sure you do it that way.
Yeah. There are actually zones in your refrigerator which are more cold than others.
Yes. Towards the back.
And some are, and lower down, where the cold accumulates.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have cold drawers which keep it right at 33.
Yes.
A 34. Like a meat drawer of the mm-hmm. refrigerator. So, where you don't want to keep your lettuce, for example, because it's going to wilt.
Yes.
You know. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that question triggered some other, as usual, lively commentary.
Okay, we've got an email here about exercise and carnitine. When and how much carnitine should be taken to improve exercise stamina? I like 1,000 milligrams 3 times a day.
I think that's a good idea. Carnitine remains somewhat controversial. I've looked at some reviews. From time to time, I look at review articles on sports supplements.
mm-hmm.
And carnitine has been proposed, and some studies suggest it's beneficial. But I've taken carnitine. I don't really notice a performance edge.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that, say, a vegetarian who is not going to have as much dietary carnitine or someone with an illness needs more carnitine. We know that, for example, patients with kidney failure, they don't manufacture carnitine. So carnitine gives them an energy boost. But for the average healthy young athlete, I'm not sure that carnitine is going to provide an energy boost.
Okay. Interesting. What carnitine does is it ushers the fatty acids into the mitochondria so that you're burning fat.
Right.
This may be more beneficial post-exercise.
So, here's another thing, though, that that's put me off a little about carnitine is this, you know, all this doping scandal where the Russian team got knocked off the Olympics?
Yes.
One of their doping agents was something called meldonium. And I said, boy, that's interesting, meldonium. What does that do? How does that improve athletic performance? Mm-hmm. It's a competitive inhibitor of carnitine. So that sounds weird. Why would that be helpful? Sometimes when you block something that's essential for energy, you upregulate receptors that make
glycogen?
You, that, I don't know, some, by some mechanism, blocking something that's mm-hmm. essential, tends to upregulate
something
the, receptor for that. And, you know, I don't precisely know how it works, or even if indeed it does work, because they said that these Russian athletes believed in taking this thing, but there's not that much proof that it really helps. It
could be placebo.
Yeah.
Effect.
It's the spasibo effect. You know what that means
spasibo,
in Russian?
Yeah,
spasibo,
yeah, yeah.
What is that? That means,
thank you.
That's a little inside baseball about Russian, but you know a little Russian.
No, I don't speak any Russian at all.
You just know that, just a couple of words.
Just a couple of words.
Okay.
I can say hanger in
just
Russian.
Like
I learned that
could
from
say,
my grandmother.
Auf Wiedersehen and au revoir.
Right.
Okay.
Au revoir, yeah. So, for exercise stamina, then.
What to take? Okay, so I gotta tell you that I'm thinking the big, for me, the biggest revolution in performance enhancement, believe me, I've tried everything.
Uh-huh.
I've tried ribose. I wasn't so sure if ribose is helpful. Ribose is in some formulas because it's, you know, helps with ATP, because ATP is, ribose is the sugar at the center of ATP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you take ribose, it's supposed to enhance energy, it's supposed to help patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia, for example. Okay, does it help athletic performance? I put it in my bottle when I'm cycling, and I don't really notice much. Maybe I didn't take it consistently enough. You know, then there's, you know, certainly caffeine has been shown to absolutely enhance performance, particularly if you don't use caffeine. You know,
right.
If you want, like, to
take a half a cup of coffee and then go to the
for
gym
an event.
Or something.
But if you're caffeine naive, like I am, a long race where I'm really, like, maybe dreading the last hour of the run, you know, I'll take, you know, some,
get a little boost.
Little boost of, you know, some little packet of,
espresso?
It's actually sports things that have caffeine in them.
Yeah.
You know, there's like little, you know, different brand, like, you know, Hammer, makes them. What in my mind really has made a difference, I'm pretty convinced of this, is nicotinamide riboside. And the way that it works is it really replenishes
niacin.
NAD. Niacin. It replenishes NAD. And so, they've not done a lot of experiments with human athletes, but I'll bet you anything human athletes are starting to take this. It'll be interesting to see if it starts to become WADA, you know, non-compliant. It probably won't because it's a nutrient.
Yeah.
It's not a drug. So it's safe for athletes to take if they are entering WADA, you know, that's the World Anti-Doping Association competition. That's for more professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
But, in experiments with animals where they block their NAD, it repletes NAD and restores performance. Muscle, because these animals become weak, they're unable to walk, they restores performance. So by extrapolation, one could say that if you are a little older, or if you're looking for that performance edge, you might get additional production of NAD, which could help energy.
Okay.
I don't think it's like rocket propulsion. But I noticed, here's the other thing, I may not be faster or stronger, that's not that
you
much.
You have more stamina.
But no, I have better recoveries.
Ah.
I'm not as destroyed after a workout. You know, the soreness or the downtime.
Okay.
You know, we just feel like, oh God, you know, today I just can't even think of running, or, you know, I'm able to sustain regular training with better muscle repair, in my opinion.
Okay.
With that. Now, that's very subjective, and I think we need to do more research before we confirm that.
What kind of a dose do you like for that?
I like 250 twice daily, and for a race, I kind of loaded. I took twice that.
Okay.
You know, I think I really did well.
Terrific.
I really breezed through the race. I didn't feel uncomfortable except from the heat on that very hot Sunday.
You're talking
Sunday
about that triathlon you
at
least. Okay.
Yeah. Where the heat was the factor that I don't think. There's nothing that can overcome the effects of that kind of heat.
Yeah, So, and that's interesting because our next question is similar.
We have time for a relatively quick question.
Yeah. From Gabe, dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what are your recommendations regarding muscle recovery after exercise to reduce soreness? Do you like Niacel for reducing soreness?
I think that it has a role to play.
Okay.
It definitely has a role to play. And then the other thing that has been touted is, and by the way, you know, let's include beetroot extract in that. Drinking beet juice, and, you know, hopefully the products that are the powders are the equivalent of the of fresh beet juice. But there's definitely good science on that, nitric oxide.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of recovery, there's also some good stuff on, black cherry.
Mm-hmm.
Black cherry is an anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
That, has a claim to fame for reducing, what's
uric
called
acid.
DOMS. It's called DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness. And that's it's a well-studied phenomenon that athletes have DOMS. And it's usually, the time course for that is not usually the day after, but 48 hours after.
When you feel it.
Yeah, that's when
you've overdone it.
Yeah.
I felt that.
Yeah. I will get, you know, actually I feel, I'll go, gee, I had a tremendous workout. You know, the next day it's like, oh, let me squeeze in another workout because I thought I'd be too sore. Like, next day you pay the price.
Yeah.
48 hours. It's delayed onset muscle soreness. But with the, so I have some dark cherry juice. It's rather sweet. So, you know, if you want to keep your carbs down, it's not so good. But I dilute it.
Eat 10 cherries.
Eat 10 dark cherries, yeah.
It's like an aspirin,
okay.
Almost.
Yeah.
But that could be something.
Yeah. It has actually some salicylic acid in it.
Yeah.
But there are other anti-inflammatory polyphenols in dark cherries, particularly dark cherries.
Mm-hmm.
And dark cherry, are there tart, actually it's tart cherry.
It's tart cherries, because it's tart cherry juice, right?
Tart cherry, yeah, tart, okay. Which is... It's less popular because it's tart. It's not as
not as sweet as the dark cherry.
And you
cherry.
Get a concentrate, which is unsweetened, which is really pucker, you know, because it's sour.
Yeah. Like unsweetened cranberry juice.
But generally things that are sour or bitter, that's the connotation is that there's something really strong and good in there.
Mm-hmm.
Polyphenols generally are bitter.
Yes.
And so, you know, plants that have a bitter taste, which some people have an aversion to, often are the ones that deliver the most benefit.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, on that sour note, let's conclude this week's episode of Q&A with Layla. Keep those questions coming because we have some good ones this week.
Mm-hmm.
Radio program at AOL.com is our number. And also we ask that if you want to continue receiving this free infusion of information into your email box or on the website, drhoffman.com. Please check out our store, because our store is one of the ways in which we help to underwrite these broadcasts. You'll get great supplements there, and you'll also assure yourself a continuous stream of hopefully useful information on the health front. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, Hoffman Center Nutritionist. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.